So the Gemara asks the following question. Mashmo, what is the name of the Mashiach? Now, I ask you the following question. Why is it important to know the name of the Mashiach? Why would the Gemara even bother with such a question? What do you think the significance of it is? The Gemara asks, Mashmo, what's the name of the Mashiach? Which provokes me to question, who cares? Like, why should we care what the name of the Mashiach is?
Perhaps the name of the Mashiach indicates some sort of characteristic of the Mashiach.
Okay,
the Mashiach
good.
Is symbolic of what he is.
Okay,
he is.
Good, good. Yes, that's correct. I think that's true. Another factor might be, well, if we know the name, then maybe we can identify it. In other words, if his name is Menachem Schneerson, then that might give us some ideas about who the Mashiach is, namely the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So knowing the name might help us identify who the Mashiach is. So that's the Gemara's question. Gemara doesn't explain why it asked the question, but the Gemara's answer, Gemara's answers, I should say, because there are a series of them, are really quite interesting because there's a pattern. And I'm going to ask you to see if you can figure out what the pattern is. I'll read the first couple without explaining them. Just read it and see if you see a pattern.
Can I ask one question first?
Already? Wow. Well, okay, go ahead.
I mean, you're saying it's important to know why there's a question. But is it a rhetorical question? You know, meaning, if something important like that, we might have heard already, right? Not on Taf Sadiq Chatham Beis in the Gemara, right? I mean, it's kind of meaning... I don't think it's just simply what's his name and it's easy what his name is. It's more like, what do you think his name is? Like, what's your knowledgeable opinion and where do you find sources for his name? Meaning it's not just a general question, what do you think his name is? Because obviously we don't know. So it's really a conjecture question that's asking for one to resort
right,
to their knowledge.
Right, so the question is why? Why is the Gemara even wondering about it?
Right, okay.
Okay, in any case, so I'm going to read the first couple of answers, and you tell me, anybody out there on Zoom, if you see a pattern. The Bei Rabbi Shila Amre, in the base medrash of Rabbi Shila, they said, Shilo Shmo, his name is Shilo. Shenemar, as it says, we just read this in last week's Parshas, Vayechi. Yaakov gives a bracha to Yehuda, and he says, Ad ki yavo Shila, until Shilo comes, you will, you know, be the Lo Yosef Shevet Mi Yehuda, and you will be the Melech. That's a reference to the Mashiach. The Bei Rabbi Yanai Amru, Amre, and the Talmidim of Rabbi Yanai said, Yinon Shmo. His name is Yinon. Shenemar Yehi Shmo Li Olam Lefnei Shemesh Yinon Shmo. This is a pasuk in Words of Malachim, I think. Actually, it's a pasuk in Tehillim, sorry. It's a reference to Shlomo HaMelech. His name will be forever before the sun. The name is Yinon. Okay, any pattern in these two, first two?
They're suffering from Chabaditis.
Meaning?
They think their Rebbe is the Mashiach.
Ah, exactly correct. Well, sort of correct. Debei Rabbi Shilo Amri Shilo Shmo. So notice the similarity in the sound of the names. Shilo and Shilo. Yinon and Yanai. Now, Yinon happens to be an Aramaic form of Yanai. If you learn Talmud Yerushalmi, you will find that Rabbi Yanai is sometimes called Rabbi Yinon. So they sound similar. And the rest of the names of the Gemara suggests all, or the next one or two anyway, have the same pattern. Students of a particular Rebbe say the name of the Mashiach is exactly like the Rebbe. And in fact, Rashi makes exactly that point. If you look at Rashi, Mashmo Shel Mashiach, don't bother finding it. It'll take me too long to enable you to find it. Yinon Shmo, Kamo Yanai, Kol Echad Hayadoresh, Achar Shmo. Everybody would darshan, following their Rebbe's name, they would darshan that the Mashiach had a similar name. That's cool. So what are we to make, before I get into the specifics of each interpretation, what are we to make of this? Like, is it, as Howard says, Chabaditis, so to speak? Is it that each school of thought that the Mashiach will It doesn't say that their Rebbe will be the Mashiach, right? That would be Chabaditis in the most, I guess, strict sense. I'm not sure I'm so comfortable with that. But anyway, phrase. But in any case, it doesn't say that their Rebbe will be the Mashiach. It says that their Rebbe's name will also be shared by the Mashiach. It's not quite the same thing. But what do you make of this? Like, why does each school think that the Mashiach's name will be the same as their Rebbe's name? Why do you think that is? Why would they think that? Right? What's the Gemara getting at here? Remember, it's not saying that my Rebbe will be Mashiach. You say, oh, my Rebbe is so great, he's so great, he'll be the Mashiach. But that's really not what the Gemara is saying. The name. Howard?
So a lot of times we say in Hebrew, Kishmo Kein Hu, that his name is who he is. So it may be referring to the attributes of his name or the meaning of his name rather than him particularly.
Well, I mean, that really, I haven't even translated the names yet. So it's almost moot as to what the names mean. The question is, why is there a pattern? Obviously, the names have a meaning, or at least that's what would make sense, and the Mefarshim say that, and we'll look at that in just a minute. But let's step back more broadly and understand, what is the significance of this overall idea that these Talmidim think that their Mashiach will have the same name as their Rebbe, not that the Rebbe would be the Mashiach, same name. So it's not obviously picking out the translation of the name, which has a particular quality per se, which we'll see in a minute, but you see what I'm driving at? Like, what's going on here? What's with this Gemara? What is it? What's the Gemara getting at?
Maybe they're competing and they're showing their school spirit.
The school spirit, like, you know, in England, each school has its own tie, design of a tie. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Regimentals, or you know, like the regimental tie for different regiments.
They're promoting their school.
Okay, like a teacher who believes in here's the school you teach for. Okay, that's good.
And I went to camp, so I know,
Okay, but do you really think that's what they're getting at? Or at least formulated that way? In team spirit, I mean, it's nice. I like it, you know, being a dean of the school. Great when my students, you know, I have all these Lander College for Men sweatshirts and mugs and swag we give out. Great things, but okay, I don't know if that's what
the Gemara is doing. If you're following a Rebbe, you're following him. I mean, everything is on him. Your whole life is devoted to him. So it's more than school spirit. I mean, it's life spirit.
Okay. I think we're getting closer to what the Gemara is getting at, which is, and let me put it to you in these terms, this is the way I understand it. For a devoted Talmud, their Rebbe is the best you can be. Otherwise, go switch schools, go to a different yeshiva. So they can't imagine a Mashiach who would be any different or who would not be the Rebbe maybe magnified. As they see all these wonderful qualities in their Rebbe, and they therefore project those exact qualities onto the Mashiach. And you might say, you know, in a broader cultural perspectives, your heroes are refractions of people and magnifications of people you admire in your life. You admire somebody, you see certain qualities or traits in that person, and therefore, on that basis, your hero is like that kind of a person, but even more magnified, even greater, even more impressive. But that's your model of what it is to be a great person. Mashiach, of course, is going to be greater than your Rebbe. No, but they're not saying that the Rebbe is a Mashiach. But that's their image of what greatness is. And so if that's your image of greatness, that's what you're going to project onto the Mashiach. That's the way human beings work. You know, if you truly admire a Rebbe, then you're going to see your Rebbe's qualities in other very, very great people. You admire your parents. You're going to see qualities that your parents possess and other great people, because these are the people you were raised to admire. They are our frame of reference. And different Rabbeim are different personalities with different strengths and different weaknesses, like every human being, and certainly different strengths. One Rebbe may be extremely, very pious and adamant with incredible kavana. Another Rebbe may be, have incredible range of knowledge. Another Rebbe may have a very, very deep analytic abilities. Another Rebbe may have great rhetorical skills. Another Rebbe may be very, very morally sensitive. Another, you know, there are so many different qualities that great people can possess. And if you are attached to any one of those people, you're going to ramify and magnify your sense of what greatness is. It'll be defined by the person who's great in your life. If you have a wonderful teacher who inspires you, then you're going to see the qualities you see in that teacher are qualities that you will admire. And if you admire those qualities, you're going to project them on the greatest of all people, namely the Mashiach. It makes a lot of psychological sense. And so I don't think it's so much school spirit, as Leah says, as the way in which each and every one of us defines greatness. We define greatness by what frames of reference we have in our lives. And those frames of reference delimit our ability to see other kinds of greatness because you're focused on the kind of greatness you see. And for you, that's great. So when the Gemara is asking Mashmo, and when the Gemara provides these varying answers, what the Gemara is doing is really speaking to different kinds of human greatness and religious greatness. And each one of these Rebbeim, no doubt, was different. So whatever the meanings of these terms, I think they're secondary. The Maral, the Abarbanel, and their various Perushim do provide an account of the meaning of each name. And I think that's real, but what I'm trying to get at is that that's secondary. That's really not what this Gemara is about. What this Gemara is about is enabling us to think about how we define greatness. You can't imagine greatness that you've never been exposed to. It's like, how do you relate to it? It always comes out of your experience, comes out of what you've, you know, you've experienced in your own life, and then you just, well, that's what greatness is, and then it gets magnified. You can't kind of invent new forms of greatness if you haven't even experienced them in some way. You might have experienced them by reading about them, being a great biography of a person, that's a way of experiencing, but it's got to come from some experience. Otherwise, it's meaningless to you. So I really think that's what the Gemara is getting at, and I think it's making a very profound point about human nature and how we reach out to ideals. We reach out to ideals based upon realities that we've experienced. Any comments or questions about that? Okay, so let's now go back and parse this and analyze each one of the names that the Gemara provides, which I say I think is some, at least as I understand the Gemara, maybe even secondary. But okay, here's what the Gemara says. Debei Rabbi Shila Amrei, I'm rereading what I read before. Shilo Shmo Shenemar Ad Ki Yavo Shilo. So the Farshim say that Shilo is a reference to Shalom. I think the Abarbanel says this. Okay, I think it seems a little stretch to me. But Debei Rabbi Yanai Amrei Yinon Shmo. Many Mefarshim say Yinon is a word for greatness, power, authority. Shenemar Yehi Shmo Liolam Lefnei Shemesh Yinon Shmo. His name should be forever before the sun. His name should be Yinon. Now, if you look at Tehillim Ayin Beis, you will see that's a reference to Shlomo HaMelech. That's what the David HaMelech is writing about his son and his son's greatness. So how do we get from Shlomo to Mashiach? Right? It's talking about Shlomo. How do we know it's talking about Mashiach? The reference is to Shlomo. With me? Hear the question? The Mefarshim provide a kind of clever answer. It's really based on Rashi. And it derives from the phrase lifnei shemesh yinon shmo, before the sun. So what this usually is interpreted to mean is that underneath the sun, his name will be yinon. In other words, he will be bright and glorious as the glowing sun. But Rashi and other mafarshim make this more explicit, suggests that this is an allusion to one of the remarkable features of the Mashiach, according to various Gemaras, several Gemaras, Erevin and Psachim. The Mashiach was created before the creation of the world. Before the world was created, the Mashiach was created. And amongst a number of things, Perkei Avos also lists a number of items that were created before the creation of the world. Perkei Avos, Rambam Sachem mentions Mashiach. And so that's Lifnei Shemesh. Before the sun was created, Yinon Shemo, there was the Mashiach. Got it? Clear? So now, everybody with me? So now I'll ask you the obvious question. What does it mean to say the Mashiach was created before the creation of the world? Like, what does that even mean? What's the significance of that? What's the idea there? Alex asks, how does anyone know that? The answer to that question is nobody knows that. It's either a tradition that goes back a long time, or it's a thought or an idea, and I'm going to try to explicate the thought or the idea that led the Gemara to make that claim, but could be that it's an oral tradition going back a very, very long time. But I now repeat my question, which is, what is the significant, what does it mean to say the Mashiach was created before the world was created?
Could it mean,
I mean, obviously chronologically that couldn't be the case.
So what does it mean? Mean that the world was created with Mashiach in mind, and with the Mashiach as the end goal?
Yes, good, good. And what does that mean? What does it mean to say the Mashiach is the end goal for the creation of the world? Michael?
I have to think about that. What does that mean for the Mashiach to be the end goal? Because Mashiach represents the finished product, so to speak, what God wants the world to aspire to.
Good, good. That's correct. I believe that's correct. One way of thinking about world history from its origins is as a long evolutionary process leading up to the perfection of the world, which is the Messianic era. There were starts and stops, successes and failures. Things didn't work out so well with Adam. Noah's generation wasn't so successful. Noah was saved. Migdal Bavel didn't work out so well. But then again, Avram came along, and then Jews ended up in slavery in Mitzrayim, pretty nasty business. Then we got the Torah at Har Sinai, that was an up. And if you look at world history from a religious and moral perspective, you will find that it grew, it improved over time, it sometimes looked and failed dramatically over time. And so one could argue that the eclipse of the institution of slavery is a great development in the history of the world, that there, slavery no longer exists. On the other hand, the Holocaust came along, and that's pretty bad. So it's been a very much of an up and down ride, the history of the world from a religious and moral perspective. But the end game is the ultimate moral and religious perfection, which constitutes the Messianic era, which the Mashiach will evoke. And therefore, it makes very good sense to say that the Mashiach was created before the world was created, because the Mashiach represents the end game, the telos, as they say in Greek, the ultimate purpose for the creation of the world. And you can't build a building unless you know what you're trying to accomplish in the building of that building. If you can't build a library unless you know what a library is. You can't build a base medrash or a shul unless you know what a shul is and what it does. In other words, you need to have an end game before you design a product, before you design or create anything. And the creation of the world was created so as to eventually achieve the perfection of the Messianic era. And so, just like Shabbos is Machshava Techila, comes first, because that's the purpose of the week. So that's why it's Machshava Techila. It comes first. It's what you were thinking first, what Hashem was thinking first. Shabbos is the purpose of creation, as we say in davening. And so the same is true for world history writ large. Okay, Howard?
I had a different thought, which obviously isn't going to fit into what you're saying, but, you know, God is HaYehovah V'yiyah. So, you know, God isn't in any one time, not limited by a time period of you know, tense. Therefore, there's no contradiction for in his mind of creation to order as we see it, God is not bound by that order and tense. So,
well, I quite agree with you. I think that's true in some sense, except that why would there be a tradition that the Mashiach specifically was created before the creation of the world? What you're explaining is how it's possible.
I hear what you're
not explaining why that's the case.
I understand. Thank you. Got it.
Okay. Thank you for that observation.
Rabbi Sokol?
Yes, Alex is saying creating the world for the redemption of the world before the achieving of perfection of the world. Redemption meaning the perfection of the world. So I agree with that, Alex, if that's what you mean. I hear somebody raising a question.
Well, there's a few things that Hashem created before he created the world.
Right.
Like the ram at Kadesh Yitzchak. So all these things were planned, like you were saying, the up and the down of history. So we have the end game and we have all these, just like you were saying about the Holocaust, but the ram is one of them that comes to mind.
Right.
Kadesh Yitzchak was meant to happen.
Pi Asson, the mouth of Bilam's donkey, was created before
right.
the... Right, so the mission missed a whole number of creatures created before
yes.
the world, and we need and that mission in Pirkei Avos requires explanation. Why is that? But I think we have an explanation for why the mission, at least to me anyway, why the Mashiach was created before the creation of the world. It represents the end game of the world. Okay, so that's that. Debei Rabbi Hanina Amar. The school, the Talmidim of Rabbi Hanina said, Hanina Shmo, surprise, surprise. His name is Hanina. Shenemar, as it says, Asher lo etein lachem Hanina. This is a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which is saying that I will not, as a result of the Korban, yet grant you chain or you know, chen, chanina, favor. So the Mashiach is defined as a being who brings chanina, favor, to the creatures of the world, which kind of makes sense, right? That could be a good name for the Mashiach. And by the way, it connotes something different than Yinon. If Yinon means greatness, authority, power, which is the way many Mefarshim translate that term, then I want you to think about this. What's the difference between a Mashiach whose name and therefore qualities that characterize him are Yinon, on the one hand, from a Mashiach whose name and therefore qualities are Hanina, are a graciousness or chen? Well, it's a different image. One image is the one of, you know, very great power, authority, force. The other is Hanina, you know, granting you graciousness and help. It's a different image. So what is the Mashiach like? Is the Mashiach most fundamentally a Melech HaMashiach? A king who beats the enemy, subjugates the rest of the world, and leads them to serve Hashem and to respect the Jewish people? Is that your image of Mashiach? Or is your image of Mashiach of a benefactor of Hanina, of graciousness? Very different image, right? So that's what Howard says. That's why he comes on a donkey and he's a universal peace, right? Yeah, it's a very different image. So what's at stake here in these different names, which I've argued is really a projection of what ultimate human perfection consists in different definitions, depending upon who your Rebbe was. Well, those different definitions or qualities bespeak a different image of the Mashiach. So there's a lot going on in this Gemara, even though it sounds, oh, what's his name? The more you deeply you think about the Gemara, the more you realize how much this Gemara is packing into these couple of lines. So that's Hanina. V'yesh omrem Menachem ben Chizkiyah shemo. Some say his name is Menachem, the son of Chizkiyah. Shene'emar, by the way, doesn't say he's anybody's Rebbe. So we've left that for good, actually, as you'll see. His name was Menachem ben Chizkiyah. Shene'emar ki rachof v'meni Menachem. A comforter is distant from me. Meshiv nafshi, somebody who calms and quiets and returns my tormented soul. So, what image of a Mashiach comes to you from the name Menachem? A comforter of suffering people. So is the Mashiach this powerful, victorious king? Or is he somebody who's graciousness and grants chain? Or is he somebody who comforts those who are suffering? Very different images of what the Mashiach will be. Now, what's with this Ben Chizkiyah? That's a little puzzling. Where does that come from? It's not a Rebbe or anybody. So nobody really knows for sure. Marsha says that there was this tradition that his name was Menachem Ben Chizkiyah. It was a Kabbalah tradition, which is another way of saying nobody can figure this out, and so it must have been a tradition because I can't figure out any other reason for it, any other basis for it.
Any a possible connection with Chizkiyahu HaMelech?
Ah, good, yes. I think that that is correct. Yes, I think it is Ben Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu was to have been the Mashiach, except that he failed. And so it is a Menachem, a comforter who was this, you might say, I put it this way, he is the comforter who succeed where his father, as it were, Chizkiyah, first paved the way, almost succeeded. And so Menachem, his son, comes and finishes the job, so to speak, as the ultimate comforter. So, and that may be the basis of the Kabbalah that the Marsha speaks of, is that it ultimately comes from Chizkiyahu, who was the greatest of all failed Mashiachim. Great, great man, didn't quite succeed. So Menachem, the ultimate comforter, not only does he comfort Bnei Yisrael, but who else does he comfort? His father. Right? He brings comfort to his father. His father, Ben Chizkiyahu, his father, name, didn't succeed. So Menachem, his son, succeeds where the father didn't. And that, by the way, is an echo of a pivotal transition in Jewish history from David HaMelech to Shlomo. David HaMelech was incomparable, but there's one goal he failed in, or was unable to achieve, and that was what?
Build the Beit HaMikdash.
Build the Beit HaMikdash, exactly correct. Kidam larov shafachta, that's another Navi tells him. You spilled too much blood. You were too much the bloody warrior to build a house of peace. And Shlomo, whose name derives from Shalom, or peace, he was the Melech who could build the Beis HaMikdash because he was never a warrior, primarily as David was. And so it was left to him to build the Beis HaMikdash. And so Shlomo carried forward his father's program and completed it. And so one way of thinking about Menachem ben Chizkiyah is that this Menachem comforted Klal Yisrael by being the Mashiach, but he comforted his father by, as it were, the name Chizkiyahu, by carrying forward the project his father attempted to achieve, but in the end it failed at. So that's my way of understanding this Gemara and understanding the Marsha, although he doesn't say this by any means. Okay, now we come to other attempts to name the Mashiach. Rabbanan Amre, everybody with me? Rabbanan said, Chivura debe Rebbe Shmo. This is really interesting for a lot of different reasons. His name is the leper who lived in the house of Rebbe. I see Michael had a question. Maybe I'll get back to it, but let me just finish with this Gemara. Michael's question in chat. So apparently there was a leper, a mitzora, I shouldn't say leper, really a mitzora, who lived in the house of Rebbe. Shenemar, as it says, Akein chayalenu hu naso umach ovenu svalom. Is our illnesses he carries and our suffering, pains he bears the burden of. Anachnu chashavnuhu nagua muka elokim umuuna. We thought him to be smitten, somebody smitten by Hashem and suffering and afflicted, but such a person will be the Mashiach. That's interesting. Like, what do you make of that?
Doesn't that go back to what we talked earlier about wrapping the bandages among the people?
Yes, I think it does. The suffering Messiah. The image of a Mashiach who suffers with and for the people. Yeah, it does have, well, it's, I mean, I wouldn't call it Christian per se. I think it's an idea out there which the Christians latched onto, and Jews had a similar idea as well. We saw that in the case of the Mashiach binding his wounds amongst the suffering wounded in Rome. And you see this Misa Sadikim Mechaper, right? The death of Sadikim is a kapara. Gemara says that time and time again. The piyutim we say about the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs, their death is what enables the Jewish people, we read in the piyutim, to survive. And so there's this idea out there that the suffering person takes on the suffering of his people and expiate their sins. That's the idea behind the Sarah Ruge Malchus. And so the Mashiach is a sufferer who takes upon himself the suffering of his people and thereby redeems them. Precisely in taking upon their suffering himself, he absorbs, so to speak, their punishment on himself, and that is an expiation for their sin. It's a very powerful idea. As I say, it's out there. We have it. Other religions have it. It's out there. Of course, we don't believe that our Mashiach died and was reborn. So, that we don't believe in that. It's wrong religion, although it's the season, I guess. So we obviously have significant differences between us and Christianity on that matter. But nevertheless, the idea is out there, and it's a very powerful idea. Very, very powerful idea. Michael says the quote, after all, is from Isaiah 53. What's Isaiah 53, Michael? I don't know what you're referring to. Michael, are you there? Klein?
Yeah, that's a very Christian, or that's a chapter, the chapter in Yeshayahu that Christians quote the most often. That's the one that they point to prove that their Messiah is supported by Tanakh.
Ah, okay. Well, I wasn't familiar with the 53 piece, but okay. Alex says it sounds very Christian. That's what I was saying. It's not that it's Christian. It's an idea that was out there at that time, which is a very powerful idea, which the Christians latched onto in their way, which obviously Jews vigorously disagree with in certain respects. But we have it in our own tradition too. Yes, can't call it Christian. Got to call it idea out there in the history of religion, which has deep resonance and has truth to it. Otherwise, we wouldn't find it in our Masorah. It's an idea out there that has power. Michael Troy asks, there are two Michaels here, part of our lives, Michael Troy and Michael Klein. So we're going from Michael Klein to Michael Troy. All this conjecture about Mashiach's name and personality makes me feel Mashiach is an invented wishful fiction. Most biblical personalities are described as having distinct personalities. Why not Mashiach? Well, biblical personalities are historical personalities, right? They existed in history, according to Almasora, and the Torah that describes them as having very concrete and different personalities based upon what the Torah says about them. So Avram is Ish Chesed, Yitzchak was self-sacrificial, whatever, however one reads into their personalities in the Torah, but the Torah describes them through very, very long narratives, stories about them. The Mashiach hasn't existed. He hasn't come to fore yet. He was created maybe before the world was created, but we haven't met him yet. So we don't know what he's like yet. So therefore we have to conjecture. In the case of Ram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, or Yosef, we're not conjecturing. We're basing what we say upon the text of the Torah. There is no text that describes the Mashiach. So there are very different ideas articulated by different different chazal as to what the Mashiach is going to be like, because there is no text on which to base it. So they're working with text and doing the best they can to darshan this text and that text and this text. They do their best. Yes, Michael?
But if he was created before the world, then he is historical.
Well, he didn't exist in the world. Just because he was created in the world doesn't mean that he was a person living in the world throughout history. What's the name of that? Who remembers this? What's the name of that guy in during World War II? Like, he always appeared somewhere. What's the name of that?
Kilroy.
What's that?
Kilroy.
Yeah, Kilroy. Yes, thank you. So it doesn't mean that the Mashiach was Kilroy, like he appeared, you know, like Og Melech HaBashan kind of appears all over the place throughout history. I don't know if it means that he was literally alive. You know, was the mouth of the donkey created? Was there a mouth of a donkey that was around before the creation of the world? I think it's more of a concept than it is a physical reality.
That's what I'm saying. So Mashiach is a concept. That's exactly what I'm saying.
No, the Mashiach, when he comes, will not be a concept. The idea that he was created, I'm not saying everybody agrees to that he was created before the beginning of the world, before the world was created. It's one mandigam. I'm not saying everybody agrees with that. But those who take that position, I don't think they necessarily mean that he was a physical, historical reality. But I think they all believe that he will be a physical reality when he comes, except that we have no historical evidence for what he will be like other than, you know, fetching drushes and chazal, or imagining what he might be like based upon your Rebbe. But until he comes, we're not going to know what he's going to be like, because he hasn't been in our world, unlike Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, or Yosef. With me, Michael?
I mean, all this conjecture about how people try to characterize Mashiach to be like their Rebbe, like some Rebbeim are more easygoing and some are more, provocative. It shows that Mashiach could be anybody that you can conjure up.
Well, he probably has to be a tzaddik, and he probably has to be a great leader. So there are probably certain qualities that he must have, I assume, in order to effectuate his role, his historic role. But you're right. We don't really know what he's going to be like until he shows up. It's true. We don't, because he hasn't shown up yet. But as I discussed at length last week, that we believe that a Mashiach will come and transform the world into a much better place is really a foundational part of our Emunah. And when he comes, he won't be a concept. He will be a reality, a real person in the world. Except that he hasn't come yet, unfortunately. But maybe he'll be here tomorrow, Michael. And then you'll find out.
And then I'll be super apikoros.
No, you won't. And you'll know exactly what he'll be like. Chas v'shalom. Anyway, that's the way I understand it. And let's continue with the Gemara. Now, the Gemara, this may be even, Michael may particularly either enjoy or take umbrage, I'm not sure, at the next piece of Gemara. Maybe Michael will say that it confirms his concern. I'm not sure if it does, frankly, but maybe Michael will say that. But the Gemara's next step is like really surprising. So hang on to your seats, and here's what the Gemara now goes on to say. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said, "Imin Chayahu, if the Mashiach is alive, then Kigon Ana, he must be like me." Should I repeat that? Like, how come you're not falling off your chairs? I'll repeat it. Amar Rav Nachman, Imin Chayahu, if the Mashiach is one of the living now, then Kigon Ana, he will be like me. Shenemar, as it says, V'hoya adiro mimenu umoshlo mikirbo yetze. His power will be from us, and his rule will be from us, from within us. We'll go out from in our midst. So, like, what is Rav Nachman saying? Those might be a little surprising, right? So, before you get too upset, he doesn't say he will be I. Does he say that? Ibn Chayahu Ana. It is I. He doesn't say that, right? He says, I see Lynn, just let me finish and I'll take your point. He says, Kugon Ana. He will be like me. He's not saying, first, for starters, that I will be the Mashiach, which, by the way, I don't think the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who is a very, obviously, everybody's thinking about that, ever said he was the Mashiach. I think his followers said that, and maybe he didn't squelch it, but I don't think he ever said it in so vocal way. And I don't think Rav Nachman is saying that either. And if that's not what he's saying, then what does he mean? And I will interpret that in just a minute, but Lynn has her hand up. Lynn.
I just think you could read it a few different ways. I mean, you could read it as, you know, he'll be somebody who is already a leader or somebody who's a tzaddik, or it could just mean that he'll be like the people. He'll be like us.
Huh, that's interesting. One of the guys.
I mean, you could read it a number of different ways. I mean, he'll be like me could mean, I mean, I see, you know, the commentary there, so that's not what he's saying or what they think he's saying. But I mean, I think he'll be like me could mean he'll be like a regular person, you know, of our community, or it could mean, you know, something more like the kind of influence he had or the kind of qualities he had.
Okay. I mean, I mean, let's focus for a moment. I mean, it's an interesting point. Let's focus specifically for a moment on the phrase, and what is the pasuk that he bases it on. He says, "Adiro mimenu umoshlo mikirbo yetze." So come from us. So Lynn is saying, "Come from us," meaning like, you know, he could be one of anybody. He may not be an extraordinary person. I tend not to think that that's what the Gemara means, because I think the overall thrust of Chazal in this whole Gemara we've been learning and will learn is that the Mashiach was an extraordinary person, not a regular person. But what the Mefarshim say, and I do think this is a good explanation, is that Rav Nachman was, there are kind of two different possibilities. Rav Nachman was the son-in-law of the Reish Galusa. He married into the Exilarch's family. Reish Galus is the family that was in charge of Bnei Yisrael. They were the political and religious leaders of the community at that time, Jewish people at that time. And he's a part of that family. The Reish Galusa, it was believed, was descended from David HaMelech. Hillel was thought to be a descendant from David HaMelech, and these were descendants of Hillel. And so they saw, Rav Nachman saw a chain of authority, David, Shlomo, Lo Yosef Shevet Mi Yehuda, Yehuda, David, David's descendants, the Davidic family would be the family that would produce the Mashiach. And what he meant by Kagon Ana is somebody like myself who is a part of the Davidic dynasty, is a part of the dynasty of David HaMelech. And that's what it means by like us, from our midst. He doesn't mean like from our midst, every single Jew's midst. He means from the midst of families like ours, who are descendants of David HaMelech and therefore suitable for being Mashiach. And this is a widespread tradition with many, many different expressions that the Mashiach will be a descendant of David HaMelech. And so that's what Rav Nachman is affirming, and that's what it means by Kagon Ano. It doesn't mean that he personally has such extraordinary qualities that the Mashiach will be like him per se. It just means it'll be a member of that household. It's possible that he thought of himself as having great qualities, but that's the way these Mefarshim read it, which I think is a good reading because it fits with the Pasuk itself. The Mekirbo, you know, Mimenu comes from us. It's really what I think it may very well mean. But the Gemara now offers another explanation. Amar Rav, Rav said, Imin Chayehu, if he is, and this is different from what Rav Nachman says, if he is amongst the living, Kigon Rabbeinu HaKadosh, then he must be like Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the author of the Mishnah, the compiler of the Mishnah. Imin Masyahu, if he is from the deceased, then he will be like Daniel, Kagon Daniel Ish Chamudos. So Rav, who was a great student of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, and obviously writing this when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was still alive, he was sort of like a junior colleague of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. He was junior, a student, but nevertheless almost like a colleague. Although the next generation down. And he said that, he doesn't say, what he's saying is that for him, Rabbeinu HaKadosh possessed the qualities that exemplify the Mashiach. And those qualities are, what we know about him, are number one, obviously his extraordinary mastery of the Torah. Number two, his authority. He was the leading authority, halachic and political, of his era. And the special significance, which Rashi stresses, is that he was a kadosh. He was a holy person. He suffered, as Rashi, let's see, if you want, I'll read Rashi. I don't know if you can find Rashi. If you can find it, great. If not, just listen along to me as I read it. If the Mashiach is from those who are alive today, Vadai Hainu Rabbeinu HaKadosh, that it must be Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Now notice Rashi here doesn't say like Rabbeinu HaKadosh, right? It doesn't say somebody like Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He identifies Rabbeinu HaKadosh as a Mashiach, if Hashem chose to bring the Mashiach at that particular juncture in Jewish history, the Mashiach would be Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He's pointing his finger. Here's the Mashiach if the Mashiach were to be brought at that time. So that's a stronger claim.
He's speaking as if they're talking. I don't think Rashi is saying it himself. I think he's representing.
Yes, of course. He's interpreting the Gemara. He's interpreting Rav. Why? Now, so why is Rabbeinu HaKadosh suitable for this task? Desovo mechaluim. He suffered from great pain. You know the story about his illness. He was very, very sick, suffered great pain. V'chassid gomer hava. He was a perfect chassid, perfectly pious. So let me ask you the following question. When I started the Gemara, I mentioned a number of qualities that Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, had. Vast Torah learning, authority, power. Does Rashi mention those? No. What does Rashi stress? He stresses his chassidus, his piety, his suffering. So why does Rashi do that? What does that tell you about Rashi's conception of the Mashiach? What it tells you, or tells me, I think, unless you have a different interpretation, is that that is what Rashi valorized most in the Mashiach's qualities. More important than anything else is that he be a chassid, a kadosh, a sufferer, rather than vast Torah learning or authority or deriving from the Davidic dynasty. Rashi, that's not what makes Rabbeinu HaKadosh special. Isn't that interesting? Maybe he's reflecting Ashkenazi ideals. You know, these are Ashkenazi ideals, piety, Hasidus, Kedusha, the classic Ashkenazi ideals. And maybe Rashi is reading Rabbeinu HaKadosh as he himself understood the ideal person. You with me, everybody? Yes or no? Michael, you're shaking your head no? What have I said that puzzled you, Michael?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I just still think that it's almost like Mashiach is every man. It's like we're just idealizing a character from this Gemara.
The Gemara is doing it, or we're doing it?
No, we say, you know, we're just theorizing.
Who's we? You and I, or the Gemara?
The Talmud, the one that we're learning in Sanhedrin.
The Gemara is theorizing. Yes, because that's all the Gemara can do, since in fact he's not here. So you might say that at some level, and I don't mean this to be negative in any means at all. It's not negative. But I don't want anybody to take it as negative. But you might say that how you define the Mashiach is a Rorschach test for what you most value in an ideal Jewish hero. Different people project onto the Mashiach, who is after all a tabula rasa, because we haven't met him yet. Hasn't arrived yet, so we don't know what he is. So different ideals of Jewish life become projected onto the Mashiach. And that's what we can do. So these great Amorayim and Tanaim are trying to figure out what the Mashiach is going to be like, and they therefore project onto the Mashiach what they regard as an ideal way of being for the Mashiach, based upon various drushes, but it's really a projection of their ideals. And I think Rashi in turn is projecting his own ideal onto the Gemara. Because as I say, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi had virtues other than being a chassid or a kaddish. Many, many qualities. And Onav, I think the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, Batla Nava Ba'olam, he was an incredible man. I mean, he was one of the greatest Jews who ever lived. Really quite an extraordinary Gadol Shabdolim. But Rashi focused on this particular facet of his personality, of his achievements. And I might have focused on some others. So Rashi is, I think, in fact, projecting onto Rabbi Yehuda Anasi those values that he thinks are most crucial. And we're doing the best we can, because we have no historical evidence. So that's if he's amongst the living, and if he's amongst the dead, then he would be like Daniel. And why Daniel? Rashi says, because he too has suffered, thrown into the, into the lion's pit. And he was a chassid gomer too. So Rashi is focusing on the chassidus, the piety of the Mashiach's quality. But I want to point out to you that whereas Rashi's first interpretation was that Rav was saying that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi would be the Mashiach, Rashi afterwards provides another reading. If you continue in Rashi, do you have it? Do all of you have? I'm assuming you have Rashi. I don't know if it's in Safari. If it's in Safari, you can click onto the. If you're looking at it through Safari, you can click onto the Farshim. So Lishna Achrina Kedgon Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Klamer Im Yesh Dugmaso B'Chaim Hain Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He's saying no. It doesn't mean that Rabbeinu HaKadosh would be the Mashiach. He's saying is that he would be like Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He's very much more like what we were saying before about Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman was saying, I would be the Mashiach. He's saying it would be like me. this is the second reading of Rashi, that it's not that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi would be the Mashiach, it's that somebody like him would be the Mashiach. But in any case, what we have here is Rashi stressing Chassidus as the primary defining virtue of the Mashiach. And so we really have different readings. None of the readings stressed great Torah learning. I'm sure the Mashiach should be knowledgeable. Some stress power, some stress Chassidus or piety, some stress Davidic dynasty, you know, different foci. But all qualities of great people. Different qualities, but qualities of great